Welcome to the podcast, Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, your host, and our focus is on mastering communication as an essential leadership skill so that you can command the room, connect with the audience, and close the deal in any context. After over 200 episodes, we are a top 1% podcast globally, thanks to you. So if you love listening to these conversations as much as I love bringing them to you, please take 30 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating and review, or just go to the website ratethispodcast.com and follow their super simple instructions. On with the show. My guest this week is Liz Ross. Liz is the CEO of Shift Paradigm, a business technology consulting company. She's also the chairman of Kenyaga Dandora School in Nairobi, Kenya. She's won awards for Women to Watch from Advertising Age, Executive Sano in Minneapolis, and she was listed as one of Fortune's most powerful women. Her proudest moment, of course, is being mom of three, a 10-year-old son and 8-year-old twin girls double trouble. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for joining us today, Liz.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Now, tell us a fun fact about you.
So connected to my nonprofit work, but I was actually born in Nairobi, Kenya.
Really?
I was. My parents decided to take 2 years off and drive around the world in a VW bus.
Oh my goodness.
And discovered they were pregnant along the way and decided to keep going. So had me in Nairobi, and I didn't come home till I was almost 15 months old, having traveled all through Northern Africa, India, Pakistan, then back through the Middle East.
Oh my goodness. I'm guessing you didn't remember a whole lot of that trip.
I don't. I have some amazing mementos, but I don't sadly remember.
But it sounds like you've gotten back there a couple of times being chairman of this amazing school as well.
I sure have. And really, I had looked for opportunities to connect into Nairobi just because that feels like home, believe it or not.
It's amazing how the universe works that way. And I'm sure they are extremely grateful for all of your service. Now, tell us about Shift Paradigm. What's your 30-second elevator pitch?
Shift is a business and growth partner to clients, which means we work to help our clients grow. What I believe, and that Shift ultimately delivers, is that we're able to see the truth of a business through the lens of technology. So that allows leaders to make decisions about how to grow faster, easier. The technology has been sold as a silver bullet. It is not. It is simply a window with which you can see how revenue moves through an organization.
That sounds like some pretty useful data. And in doing that, what is the most important leadership communication that you had to learn, and how did you learn it?
I love this question, and I spent some real time thinking about it. The need for transparency within a framework. Let me tell you what I mean. So culturally, we live in a world of near perfect information. So people want to have sort of genuine, clear communication about things that are impacting the organization almost in real time. So let me set the stage. It's 2018. We're in a sale process for Periscope, which is an agency in Minneapolis. A lot of moving parts and uncertainty as to the buyer, the process, and ultimately even the outcome. Would we sell? Would we not? And there were rumors in the system about what was happening, and we couldn't say anything. And in fact, the leadership, including my parking spots, were right in the front of the building. So if we weren't there, it was very obvious. And so it drove a lot of disruption and a lot of concern inside of the business. There was gossip. And what I learned and what we should have done was share that the ownership structure was under review. We should have, within a framework, communicated that something was happening and people didn't have to try to make it up within their heads. And that would have calmed some of the crazier stories, that would have calmed some of the unrest. Now, here's the flip side. Exposing everything without plans will actually make things worse sometimes. And this can come at a great cost. I certainly have taken my hits on anonymous employment review websites where people say that I'm an idiot. Well, I'm not, but it means that I can't, if I communicate too early or I communicate in an incomplete way, the takeaway can be that I don't always have all the answers. So what I've had to learn, and frankly, still learning, this is going to be a lifetime exercise, is that for the big rocks, the big immovable objects in a business, the more that we can communicate with acknowledgement that there's still work to be done, that there's still uncertainties, the better we are as leaders. So transparency within a framework is the biggest lesson for me.
What was the hardest part in all of that?
The hardest part was balancing sort of what was happening externally, all of the effort that was being put towards marketing the company, telling the story, being so proud of it, and yet having to be disingenuous and unclear internally, which made people very unhappy with the leadership, inclusive of me. And so I found that walk, that line, very difficult.
So you were trying to sell the company at the time. That was the goal, was an acquisition.
Correct.
Had that decision been formally communicated to the organization?
No.
Okay, so people started to get wind of something.
Of something. And they really didn't know what it was. It had been a family-owned company for 30 plus years. People were heavily invested in it as a family. Mm. And so the disruption and the decisioning that we made, and certainly the family that made the decision to sell it, was to keep it quiet because they wanted to try to keep their options open. Mm. And the reality is you can't always keep all your options open.
Right. And so if people suddenly start to get wind of, wait a minute, this, I'm guessing if it's a family run business for 30 years, there are a lot of other employees who had been loyal for a very long time, as much to the family as to the company, so to speak, or the product.
100%. 100%. And really had invested so much of their lives and livelihood into being a part of this. Mm. And, you know, it just, I don't know that we would have been perfect had we gone out and shared some of it, but I do think we would have done better than we did.
Sure, sure. When you get the feeling of that betrayal, I've been loyal to you and you're telling me you're going to leave me without any discussion. When was I going to find out about this?
That's right.
Not a good beginning to any conversation.
That's right.
So transparency within a framework. Yeah. And I think having that measured point is also that important balance, if I heard correctly, because we don't just want to data dump without filter, without organization. To an extent, there's a need to know. And there's a timing of when it's important for people to know, not to hide it, but because we don't want them to come up with their own conclusions that are erroneous and scary and whatever else. We want to make sure only sharing what is clear, what's known, what you're confident in. It's always a challenging fine line to walk, isn't it?
I mean, very much so. And I think you make the best decision that you can in that moment with the information that you have, but it is tricky. It is very tricky.
Yes. Now, with different personality tests that we've taken over the years, was there one in particular that sticks out for you as something that has influenced the way that you communicate with others in your team or organization?
I don't have a single test. As an executive, I have been lucky enough to be tested and trained and coached a number of different times. And in every test, in every one of them, what I would say has been most powerful is the consistency. Mm. So no matter the test, I am always someone who comes out as someone who loves to imagine, someone who looks around corners, who likes to think of new ways of doing things, and who always, always is an optimist. Mm. And so a funny quote I heard years ago about consulting was a consultant who told a client that they were unconstrained by data. Mm. Now, I think that's a funny way of saying being optimistic, potentially without reason. But for me, I am not always tied to the details and the how, and I can overlook complexities that are barriers to others and my ideas. Mm. So when you say, how has that influenced me? I'm really aware of who I am and who I am not. And maybe that's the gift of working for any number of years.
Sure.
And for me, what I have done or how I've built around that is that I put opposing force personalities around me very deliberately. Mm. So when I'm building out a team, and I think this is true for everyone at every level. So this shouldn't just be seen as something as, hey, I'm a leader, so I'm able to assemble teams around me. Everyone should be looking to surround themselves with people that have opposing force styles and personalities. And that can be hard.
Sure.
It's easier when everybody can get to a point of singularity or shared thinking. But the truth is that we are better when we have people around us that push against our strengths and, more importantly, our weaknesses.
I think that really also drives home your previous point about the importance of transparent communication and very proactive communication in that space, because to the extent that you've got people who have very different ways of thinking and ways of seeing the world, you have to be willing to communicate a lot to each other and to be able to work through stuff and come to a mutual understanding and agreement of right next steps forward, or make sure that everybody's rowing in the same direction and not detracting one way or another. It's okay to disagree. It's another to resist.
That is a perfect articulation of the thread there, which very tricky. And the resistance can be really counterproductive, particularly when you're looking across a leadership team. However, people resist less when they've been a part of crafting the answer.
Yes.
But again, very tricky. I would suggest that we all can be better at that. And knowing our own style, knowing who we are, is a really powerful way to filter. And so I've always loved Strength Finder, only in that it is, you build off of your strengths, not trying to correct your weaknesses. And that's sort of part of how you build teams around you.
Sure.
You're not trying to correct, but you're trying to add.
Yes, I think it is certainly easier when everybody comes to easy agreement all the time. It's a smoother ride. It's just a ride maybe in the wrong direction.
That's right. That's right.
I forget who it was who said, if there's 20 people in a room and everyone agrees, then 19 of them didn't need to be there.
I love that. And you'll appreciate when I moderate a panel, for example, in a speaking engagement, I always tell the panelists, we have to fight. There has to be something we disagree on, or our time on stage or wherever we are is a waste.
Interesting.
Because disagreement is really where the nuggets of insight and the nuggets of growth are going to happen.
Yes. And of course, then the art comes in. How do we have the disagreement without having it be combative or contentious or otherwise uncomfortable, so the audience appreciates the intrigue, the drama, the perspective, without having it turn uncomfortable in the icky kind of way?
Very true. And the whole premise of communication, I believe, is that having a point of view is one of the most valuable things we possess.
Yes.
And having a point of view that is opposite or counter to sort of current narratives is where real insight happens. And my favorite example, coming out of a long career in advertising, is sort of moms love their kids. Much of advertising in the last 20 years was really based on moms love their kids, and then the secondary is moms are busy.
Mm.
They're inarguable. They're true. They are not insights.
Mm.
And so having a point of view comes from, at some level, continuing to ask the question, why? And, you know, acting like my 8-year-old when I'm making dinner, why?
Yeah.
But it really allows us to formulate a point of view that is rooted in sort of truths, but also coupled with insight. And so I really believe that's the secret for growth, communication, and all of it.
I couldn't agree more. Or maybe I should disagree, given your last point. But it is interesting because so often I hear people who say, well, I want a voice. I want to be heard. And yet when we have it, we hold it back and we don't share because we don't want to disagree. We don't want to rock the boat. What's the point of having a voice if you don't have a point of view to use it for?
Absolutely.
So on that area, tell me about an opportunity you missed because you held back and you did not use that voice. You did not share that point of view. Why did you hold back? And if you could have a do-over, what would you have done or said differently?
Yeah. So I'm going to take you back to 2019.
Okay.
At Periscope again. So we had this incredible business that had zero leverage. There was no outside investment and no debt. And it's something that the family who owned the business was incredibly proud of. And frankly, they should have been. They had built something without taking in sort of outside money or the complexity that that comes with.
Mm-hmm.
However, it was the beginning of the boom for agencies that had deep digital capabilities.
Mm.
And because of that ownership structure, we didn't have them and we couldn't build it fast enough, right? Because the market was moving. And so we should have, and the opportunity I missed to guide the family was to do some leveraged acquisitions, take on debt and be able to build out those capabilities in the business. So let me tell you, to frame it, right? Our business ended up trading about 8.5 times EBITDA, which is entirely respectable. That is a very good outcome.
Definitely.
However, there were agencies right after us that traded at over 20 times EBITDA.
Wow.
So the difference maker there is huge. And that would have been a result that would have allowed us to give much greater wealth to the people inside of the business and to a larger return versus just simply to the family that owned it. And so I didn't have the experience with debt and debt service that I do today. And I missed the opportunity to guide the family that owned the business in a way that would have been really meaningful for the people in the organization, for myself, and ultimately for them.
Yes.
So I missed it. I am a big proponent in never look backwards. And this is true in all facets of my life. But if I could do a do-over, what I would have done is brought in external parties that would have been able to help guide us more effectively through that, that would have been able to spot that. I could have dug deeper in terms of how those leverage structures work, what the mechanics were, to ultimately convince the family to do that, which would have driven a much better return for the company.
What would have been an inflection point, that sliding doors moment where you would have and could have and should have said to them something else? Can you remember a meeting or an opportunity? Should you have initiated a phone call? Should it have, was there a meeting when you remember just, okay, kind of being resolved and not saying something and then walking away going, this is a mistake. That was a mistake.
Yes. Yes. There always is a moment, right?
And what would that pivot have been? What happened in that moment?
About a year in, I was at a board dinner. So it was the dinner the night before the board meeting. And we were talking about the future of the business, and other members of the board were friends and sort of longtime associates of the owner. And we were talking about what the future of the company was going to be. And the owner was very resistant to selling, right? He was thinking, you know, maybe this is a legacy, maybe that we should hold on to this. And I pushed at that moment on, but we are growing in service of what? We are pushing in service of what? And I really missed the opportunity to say, if we're going down this path, let's go big. Let's learn everything we can about how this works. How can we extract maximum value? And instead, I let myself get pushed back a little bit, because it was safer and a little easier to say, okay, we don't need to think about this. But what I should have done was driven harder to a conclusion of we're going, which means we need to spend the next 18 months, 2 years driving towards that end result. So in hindsight, I should have pushed harder. I should have circled back after it because it was a really great dinner conversation.
Sure.
But it's dinner. There's people are having wine and you don't really anchor into anything. And I didn't push at that moment. And that was the moment I should have.
That was a good seed planting opportunity.
Very much. Very much.
Missed the opportunity to water that one. So now I think that would have been a challenge for you. So I think this is a good opportunity for you to challenge our listeners. Let's go to the listener influence challenge of the day. What is one step, Liz, that you would like to challenge our listeners to take that they can complete within 24 hours to have more influence?
So I love this question. And there is no podcast, article, anything that's happening without talk of AI. And while we haven't yet talked about it today, certainly I'm sure it's going to come up. The influence challenge I have for the audience is to go today and copy what is inside your LinkedIn profile. You don't even have to format it. You can just literally just grab the text. I want you to go to 2 or 3 of the current AI systems. So it could be ChatGPT, it could be Claude. You pick the ones and upload that text. And the question you are going to ask the AI is, what can you tell me the most important accomplishments this person has had?
Interesting.
What you are going to learn is how the AI sees you based on what you have communicated in your written profile. Then the second prompt that I'm going to ask you to put in.
Okay.
Is write an introduction to this person that is inspiring, meaningful, and includes elements from their resume.
I love it. And who do we tell it we want to introduce this person to?
We don't need to actually tell it.
Okay.
What you're going to do is when that comes back, what you're going to see is an articulation of who you are. Ultimately, then you're going to use that to determine, does that fit what you want? You might want to adjust what is the text inside of the job descriptions that you have, or you want to highlight different accomplishments in different ways so that it picks it up differently. But it's essentially holding up a mirror to your online professional profile. So again, LinkedIn, and seeing, is it reflecting what you want?
I love it. And it's a great opportunity to do a couple of things. Number one, just generally to try AI, ChatGPT, Claude, whatever platform they like. For those who have never done so or have only barely scratched the surface of it and are a little intimidated, I'm definitely in that camp of someone who should be a lot more proactively comfortable and confident using it more than I am. But fortunately, I've got teammates who are much better than I am at it. But I love that you've given the prompt, because that's what a lot of people don't realize is key, is having the tool doesn't matter. It's the quality of the prompt you give it that makes all the difference. So thank you for offering those quotes. And I think the other part that is really helpful in this is that so many people are not good at talking about themselves. And I don't mean in the arrogant sense, but just in the sense of valuable networking, in the sense of interviewing, in the sense of you meet somebody, they say, so, you know, what do you do? Not that you have to share your greatest accomplishments, but just to think about, okay, how might this person see me, or what might be valuable to share with this person? Of course, depending on the context and stuff, but it's nice, especially for those who feel like, well, I don't know that I really have anything interesting to share, to see it through the algorithm and go, oh, wow, that's how I come across. That's great. Or maybe the flip side to say, oh, gee, I thought it was coming across really well. I've done so much. I've worked so hard. I know what I've built, but the way I have apparently framed it through on my LinkedIn profile kind of makes it sound like I'm a cog in the works. Huh, perhaps I should adjust my language on this. That's not how I want to be portrayed. Am I interpreting this correctly, Liz?
Exactly, exactly. And I think if you think about communication influence, part of it is understanding how other people see us.
Yes.
And I think the AI just gives us such a unique opportunity to see what we're putting out there. And again, maybe you're thrilled with what comes back.
Yeah.
And or maybe you want to adjust. And I think that that is just a great mirror. It's a great way to use the technology. But to your point, everyone should be using this technology. And if I can give advice,
please
use the new technology. Because what is happening right now is that even if you've used something, say you've gone onto ChatGPT and you asked it a question and you thought the answer was silly, the pace at which the technology is changing is so extreme that whatever you put in 30 days ago that you thought, well, that's just dumb, has already changed. So being literate, and this is how I explain this to my 82-year-old father, technology advancement is literacy. So that this is the equivalent of continuing to learn to read. And so I would suggest that you try these things and you use them.
I like that, that the technology use is the modern day version of literacy. You really have to be literate in how to use this in order to be functional. And I am frankly amazed at how fast this technology has just become absolutely ubiquitous. It's just, it's pervasive in every aspect of life, where a year ago,
Correct. Even
there were, you know, a few people who would talk about it and we were still marveling at sort of how good Siri was. And one or two people then started saying, hey, this is usable. Let me show you a couple of things. I sat in on a lot of webinars, et cetera. And it was like, wow, that's really interesting. Who knew that geniuses like this knew how to do that? And now everybody's using it, sometimes not for the best purposes,
Yeah. But
within less than a year, I think it has absolutely swept. And it's one of those things where if we don't get on board with it now, we are going to be painfully left behind quickly. And gosh, there was a quote I heard a million years ago that was, there's three kinds of people: those who make things happen, those who watch things happen, and those who wonder what happened.
Yes. And an additional quote that I'll give you is from Alvin Toffler, who was a noted futurist. His quote was that the illiterate of the 20th century will not be those who cannot read and write, but those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn.
Yes. And the relearning is coming faster and faster.
That's right.
And faster.
That's right.
And that was by, say his name again?
Alvin Toffler. So he was the author in 1972 of a book called Future Shock, which essentially predicted the rise of the internet, if you can believe it, in 1972. And then in 1994, he wrote a book called The Third Wave that also predicted the rise of nationalism, sort of global powerhouse companies that had greater wealth and influence than any country in the world. Really amazing human being.
And we'll be sure to put the link to that book in the show notes as well. So now I'm curious, what is a time when you had to speak up as the lone voice of dissent or disagreement? You mentioned in that board meeting, you didn't speak up as that lone voice. When did you do it?
I'm going to take you even further back than I have before to 2007. I was working in an ad agency, but I was working on Clorox as a company. Clorox is this incredible company, my favorite that I've ever worked on, out in the Bay Area, but essentially a very Midwestern company with deep roots. And I'm a Midwesterner who at the time was living in California, so it felt very much like home. At that time, Clorox was spending about $300 million on television advertising. So again, 2007, Facebook is out, the internet is in wide use.
Yeah.
And the spend for Clorox was very small. I was given the opportunity to speak to the 300 marketers at their offsite. And the opportunity was really to talk about what is the future going to look like. And I spoke about the future of the internet. I spoke about the reality of how people were gathering information, that it wasn't a fad. And then there was a breakout session. And the breakout session, one of the activities at the time was to vote for their favorite brand. Again, sort of a somewhat silly icebreaker type exercise. Now remember, they spend $300 million on television advertising. When the votes came back, the Clorox marketers all voted their favorite brand was TiVo. Now, some of your listeners are maybe too young to remember TiVo.
I remember TiVo.
TiVo was the first device that allowed you to skip commercials. And I stood up and spoke to the CMO at the time and asked to get back up. And what I said was, you cannot think of yourselves as having access to technology that your consumers do not. And when you divorce who you are as a person from what you do as a marketer or a business leader, you will never find success. And that was a moment to where I really pushed that team to think differently, to not overlook technology or to think of themselves as having better access or different access to things like TiVo, when they were spending the company's money on advertising, and yet in their personal lives, they were working to avoid it.
Yeah.
And that was a really salient moment for me in terms of, I have to say something. And it's a tough thing to hear. And I was, you know, I'm the agency.
Sure.
But it was a powerful moment for me as a leader. It was a powerful moment for me as a communicator. And ultimately, I think Clorox ended up changing a lot of how they did marketing. Today, they're one of the world's very best marketers. And I really do believe it's because they understand that at their core.
So the problem in there that if anybody missed it along the way, they are spending $300 million in TV advertising, a little bit of effectively market research in talking to the marketers, which was a rather large team at that point. Was it 300 marketers? Did I hear that correctly?
Yep.
So basically $1 million per marketer was the ad spend at that point. And in surveying all of them who were creating TV ads, when surveyed, they shared that their favorite device brand was TiVo, which allowed them to skip ads. So we're seeing some sort of disconnect. Perhaps we should take our own advice and realize, if we're doing our best to avoid the very product that we are creating, perhaps we should look towards a new product.
100%. And in that moment, when you spot that, and for all of the listeners today, when you spot an inconsistency, say something. Back to the very beginning of what we talked about around having a point of view. Oftentimes it comes from observing something that is just so obvious that maybe everyone has missed it, but the ability to observe and then communicate that will drive all of the influence in your career, in your life, pointing that out.
And Leslie, tell me about a time when you went to bat for someone else. Who did you speak to on their behalf and why?
Yeah, so another just great question that's much more recent. So when I joined Shift as CEO, again, it was a position that had existed, but they had brought together five different acquisitions with very different people, very different processes, cultures, and there had not really been a singular leader of the organization. And so back to sort of our talking at the very beginning about what are our strengths, how do you drive influence, I knew that my biggest determinant of success was going to be building a team around me that reflected my own experiences, but also was able to augment my weaknesses. And I had worked with a woman in the previous 10 years, not directly, that I knew I wanted to bring in as chief of staff. It was a new position. No one had ever had it. And she had never had it. But the idea was to bring somebody in who is process-driven, detail-oriented. And I really knew I wanted to hire her. The team really pushed back. They did not want that role. They did not see it as a value add. And it was a big push. And for me, I couldn't just ram it through, right? I couldn't just say, this is happening and you're going to like it, because I was brand new. Remember, lots of different people, lots of different cultures, processes, all of it. So for me, I had to stand in front of that group and say, this is going to change our trajectory. This person, her name is Ariana, is going to be the most important hire we make over the next 2 years, easily. And for me, going to bat for somebody else in that way was, again, different in the context of I'm not dictating because I needed the group to accept her. I needed the group to sort of wrap her in. And that was an absolute difference maker for us. She's gone on. We've actually just promoted her. She's now the SVP of operations for Shift Paradigm. It's worked out beautifully, not without its bumps, as most good things are. But for me, standing in front and putting forth someone that I knew would be amazing in this role was a really great opportunity to go to bat for somebody else.
And it seems like it was a logical choice to create someone else who would help be something of a nexus point for these five major acquisitions, all merging together. You need somebody who can navigate and manage all of that tangle of sorts in a way that you didn't have to. You shouldn't have to. You need a gatekeeper who's good at juggling that many balls and keeping track of them all at the same time.
Yeah.
And as you, as the formally established ideas person, doesn't want to have to think about how to navigate all of that.
That's exactly right. And really would do poorly in that world. So having her be able to, detangling is the perfect way to think about it. It was a bowl of spaghetti of everything. And Ariana's favorite thing to do, she jokes that if she comes to your house, she could find herself reorganizing your kitchen to make it work better.
Can I have her contact information, please? I think I need to have a conversation with her this weekend.
I joke all the time that I'm going to make her come and spend a week at my house and do just that.
That would be really, really useful. I wouldn't share her contact information with a lot of people. She'll be getting way too many calls after this episode goes live. Oh my goodness. Well, Liz, this has been a great conversation. How can people learn more about you and Shift Paradigm?
So our website is at shiftparadigm.com. We are active on all of the social platforms and we love to hear from people. I would love to hear from people who have questions or thoughts. You can find me on all of the platforms.
And of course, we will share those links in social media as well. Thank you so much for joining us today, Liz. I've enjoyed every moment.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a great conversation.
And thank you out there for tuning in. As always, please be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And of course, don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or your platform of choice so we can help even more people to increase their confidence, presence, and influence. And if you're not sure how to do that, of course, you can go to ratethispodcast.com/influence. And finally, if you want to download my free guide to equipment recommendations for virtual influence, including my picks for microphones, lights, and more, go to speakingtoinfluence.com. I'm Dr. Laura Sokola, and you're listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite.
Thanks for listening to Speaking to Influence, Communication Secrets of the C-Suite, the show for leaders who want to speak with impact. The hosts, producers, owners, and media distributors of the show make no guarantees that the strategies and information discussed will result in profit or other success and may result in losses. The opinions and statements of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the owners, staff, managers, broadcasters, or sponsors of the show. No medical or psychological therapy or personal or professional wellness or relationship advice is offered in the show. You are advised to seek counsel on matters related to your health, family, relationships, job, or other business and legal matters from licensed advisors in those areas prior to making any changes in business or lifestyle. No information provided may be suitable in your situation. As always, take responsibility for the decisions and actions you take, including the reactions they may make in your work, family, health, and life.